This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
You want to get on the conversation, you can call or text into the phone line at 877-377-6963. Let's go to the phone lines. Danny is in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. It looked like these Razorback games are all taking the same script. We hit a dry spell in the second half, and we lock down on defense, and we go about 5 minutes where nobody scores. And then at the end, we start hitting a few shots. I really wish we could eliminate these dry spells. You know, get to the free throw line, shoot some free throws, get some points.
Yeah, well, Danny, the thing is the greatest thing about that script is it ends in a win, and that's really the only thing that
matters. Absolutely. You got to love – I just love the way this gritty team plays. I mean, it's not pretty, but it is fun. It's fun to win, right?
It's always fun to win, for sure.
Tommy, I agree with you on these officials. I do not know what pass interference is. I really don't. Because it used to be if you touched a player before the ball got there, it was pass interference. But now they're getting mugged on every play. I don't know what pass interference is. I mean,
it goes back and forth
on every single play.
Thing you got to remember is that ball's a 50-50 ball. That ball, once it's in the air, doesn't belong to the offense. The defender has as much right. Well, but I think people, you know, don't realize how much hand fighting, pushing, displacement goes on from the offensive player a lot of times.
I guess what I'm getting at is where they wrap their arms around the waist of the receiver and pull them, which is almost every play. I feel sorry for Drew Brees because last year it was a defensive pass interference they didn't call.
Yep.
And this year, it was, in my opinion, I think that was passing. When you push off and his head snapped back, he gained an advantage. And that's just my opinion. But, guys, you have a good day, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Danny.
I appreciate it, Danny. I mean, I that's why it's like when it comes to the officiating thing of really any major sport, especially in those things, I don't really like to take to complain unless I just feel like I for sure think it was a bad call. Like, for instance, in the Arkansas Razorback basketball game, there was a call that I didn't like. I don't know how you felt about it, Tommy, but it was when they called an offensive foul on Adrio Bailey. Look, I thought he had good position. I thought that he was in, you know, I thought it was just a bad call that they went to the blocking foul. Yeah, it was. I mean, it didn't have any, obviously, indication on the outcome of the game. No. It was outside when the Texas A&M player was driving in. So, anyway, my point is that those are the only times where I'm like, I didn't really like that call. But for the most case, I'm just assuming that someone else knows more than me, so I'm just going to let it go with the official. That's why I come in here and I'm like, Tommy, what'd you think? And then Tommy will take off his glasses and give his whole spiel on why it was or why it was not the right call, and then he puts his glasses back on, and then we move on.
My buddy RB, who knows more than me, instantly texted when you brought this play up and said, Bailey flopped. So
okay. Well, see, and again, that's why I didn't like it, but, you know, what do I know? I'm just a lowly radio guy up there in press row trying to...
With a bad angle, by the way.
With a bad angle.
With a bad angle.
With a bad angle and everybody grumpy around me. And
that's what I always find fascinating about not just media but fans. The guy sitting in section 212, upper deck corner, third row from the top, he thinks he is certain the guy that is 4 feet from the floor, 4 feet from the play on the floor has missed it. When he's three rows from the top in the corner, you know. I tell you, officiating is all about angles.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what better angle do you need than up there? You can see the whole thing, Tommy. You can see all of it from up there. That's for sure. Let's go back to the phone lines. Billy Joe, the LSU fan, is on the line. What's going on, Billy Joe?
We get a little piece of LSU this week.
I just want to say God bless y'all and congrats on y'all's win. Man, yesterday, wow. You got good officiation, you got bad officiation. It's like having good politics and bad politics, right? Man, I'm a Drew Brees fan, but I think, you know, in the future we might need to go with a different route. You know, the way we played in the season compared to yesterday, was we really there or not? Was we hanging up in there? And then we just thought, oh, they're beating us, and we decided to come out there and play football. You know, congrats to Minnesota. They beat us hands down. Regardless of bad officiation or not, it is what it is. But with that being said, man, I'm just looking forward to the LSU and Clemson game, and I just think, I don't know, maybe y'all might have a different outlook on this, but I think maybe we might need to go with a different outlook on this. And where do y'all think Tom Brady will go next year if he don't sign with the Patriots?
Well, appreciate the phone call, Billy Joe. I hope that he goes to a team that just completely and totally blows everyone's mind and it freaks everybody out. And I don't know exactly what team that would be. I think it would be funny if he went to like the Colts, because it'd be like, you know, all those great battles that you had between him and Peyton Manning back in the day. And they need a quarterback.
Yeah. The question is, how much is left in the tank for Brady? Can he still do it?
Man. I mean, I think he can. He's better than most right now.
Could you see him and Josh McDaniel going somewhere together? His offensive coordinator, who they've worked together for a long time. McDaniel left, came back, and has turned down other head coaching jobs because he wants to coach Tom Brady.
Mm-hmm.
Could you see that being a package deal somewhere? McDaniel head coach, Brady comes to support.
I mean, I think that you could do, if you're a franchise that's in the desperate need of some sort of spark, yeah.
If you're an owner, GM, whatever, would you move heavens and earths to make that happen? Would you move a galaxy to make Tom Brady? Would you fire your sitting head coach to bring in McDaniel to get Tom Brady?
Yes.
End of Tom Brady's career.
If I'm a franchise that's in desperate need, yes. Like if I'm the Washington Redskins right now,
or the Browns, or of course the Browns got a young,
that's what I'm saying,
up and coming quarterback.
And he couldn't be the Cowboys because they have Dak Prescott. So you're not going to do that. But if I'm like the Redskins, yeah, I'm taking that deal right now. Because Tom Brady still threw for 4,000 yards this year. He had 24 touchdowns, 8 interceptions. I mean, it wasn't necessarily his greatest year. His QBR was only 53. It wasn't that great. But still, he's obviously still got something left in the tank. So I'd take a risk on him.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much he would demand as far as money goes. But
and I don't know how much, you know, most NFL franchises don't need to worry about selling tickets. The NFL, I mean, there's been some slight erosion, but tickets still sell quite well in the NFL. So you bring Brady in, I don't know that, you know, it's not like college football where sometimes you got to change coaches to get ticket sales back up or attendance back up. The NFL's still doing pretty good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the games I watch, they still look pretty full.
Mm-hmm. I think the ratings are all right.
Ratings are good. I mean, so you don't do it from that standpoint. I'm saying, you know, we see that. I guess there's one or two places you might say that, but Tom Brady ain't going to those markets.
No, not at all. So, but you know, that's I like the NFL playoffs. I don't necessarily watch the NFL as much, but I do like to watch the NFL playoffs. So, but I did want to get back to this because I wanted to use kind of our longer segment here to discuss this with the Razorback victory over Texas A&M. I mean, hey, listen, anytime you win, it's great. It's a Texas A&M team that's not that good, but they don't match up very well against Arkansas. But Arkansas still made the plays, got the victory. It was all well and good. But I want to talk about this specifically. And if you listen to our intro, you have heard Eric Musselman talking about the atmosphere that was there in Fayetteville. He said that he had a friend of his from the Bay Area that came to that arena and said it was the loudest arena he's ever been to in his life. He's talking about Bud Walton Arena.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, and I could be wrong about this, this is why I'm bringing it up. But to me, I felt like the crowd was there, but the atmosphere itself was lacking. Now, a lot of that had to do with the game. It's tough to have a game where it's not exactly the highest scoring game. You had these scoring droughts from both teams. In fact, there was a point in time where Arkansas went almost 4 minutes without scoring a bucket. It was just these long stretches that make it difficult. But I still think there's got to be some time before Bud Walton can really get back to what it is and what it needs to be. Because, yep. I mean, listen, over 19,000 people showed up to that game on Saturday against A&M, the worst team in the SEC.
Yep. Well, they didn't show up for A&M, obviously. They showed up because they're excited about what is now a 12-1 program. And I think they're excited about Eric Musselman. They're betting on the come. They're betting on the fact that the future of Arkansas basketball is very bright right now. And you want to get in. You want to be there. It's the fear of missing out. It's the FOMO right now. Gotta go. Gotta be there. It's a great way to end the holiday season, so to speak, be at the game. But there's a lot of Saturdays that are sold out at this point. But you're right. You were there. I was not at the game in person. Watched the broadcast. I listened to much of it on the radio and then came back and watched the TV broadcast. It did not translate through the radio or the TV, which sometimes isn't always accurate. That I didn't think, but I didn't think Eric Musselman got a true piece of what the best of Bud Walton can be.
Mm-hmm.
There were little flashes, maybe, but not. There weren't stretches of the greatness that building can be.
Yeah,
he's going to get it in the Kentucky game, I think for sure. But you're right, the game didn't lead to that.
Yeah.
That was the problem.
Yeah, and I was complaining, because I do that, on social media just about how the formats of these games are done by the University of Arkansas. I feel like so many times they try so hard to make it an NBA-style atmosphere with these little segments and whatnot, which I get because, you know, these people go to these marketing meetings and these big events. You're
talking about these games and little things they do during the timeouts on the floor.
Yeah, because it's like
they have John Williams out there.
Yeah, and it just
kind of the MC, if you will.
Which during certain times it's fine, but it's like when you just went on a run, and it's like time and place. When you go on a run and the atmosphere is there, I don't really think you need to come in and just completely kill it with the French fry toss. You know, it's nothing against it.
Yeah.
If you want to be able to build it into that same atmosphere, which you gotta, listen, you got to make money. You got to have these ads, which I guess I don't know how much they pay for those, but I'm sure it's a pretty penny. You got to have it. I get it. I understand it. That's just the way it is.
It's not quite as expensive as a sponsorship on the Morning Rush, but it's
getting there.
It's getting there.
It's getting there. One day it'll be there. But
that's their goal.
I understand that you got to have them. I'm just saying that when you continue to have this NBA-style atmosphere, I feel like you just take away, because the fans need to dictate the atmosphere, not the other way around.
Yeah. I've never worked at the University of Arkansas, but I can imagine that they have meetings throughout the week and there is a script, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
All right. During the first under 16 timeout, this is what we do during that two and a half minutes. And then on the under 12. And then there is something that fills all these moments. All right. From 30 minutes prior to tip to here's what we're going to have John George say. Here's the things we're going to do when the teams aren't on the floor. Here's where the band's going to play. It's all orchestrated. And all these timeouts are orchestrated. Problem is, you don't know when the team's going to go on a 14-2 run, and Buzz Williams or whoever the opposing coach is going to have to call a timeout. Well, the script says here, French fry toss. So we go with the script.
Yeah.
Problem is, what you're saying is they need to have some flexibility to call an audible when the environment, the atmosphere dictates something else.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember as a kid, and you're too young for this, you don't remember Barnhill. You don't remember Jim Ropkin. You don't remember the light bar. You don't remember, you know, the sound meter, the light.
Yeah,
or you don't remember any of that, do you?
No, I've just heard
it. You've heard about it.
Yeah. I wasn't old enough for Barnhill.
But I remember all that. And when Ropkin would take the tubas and the horns and they'd go running around the arena and all the, I mean, it just whipped the place into a frenzy. Now, that was long before you had a lot of this organized stuff and sponsorships, and you didn't have Whataburger in Fayetteville, and you didn't have a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Times have changed. But you're right. Now that you've got partner, you didn't have partnerships with people like Learfield IMG, whose sole job is to sell every square inch and space of ad time available.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of it. The ribbon boards, all this stuff has to feed into a revenue stream somehow. And that's part of these timeouts. Then we got to honor somebody.
Yeah. But see, and that maybe that's
so it, but see, they bad. Sit around. They sit around on a Wednesday scripting out Saturday's timeouts. Hey, we got eight of these, and here's what we're going to do, and blah, 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 you know. Yeah. And they script all this stuff out.
Yeah.
And some of it's, well, we do this every game at the under 12 in the second half. We have the French fry talk.
Yeah, and again, it goes to time and place, because I'm like, all right, if you know that you don't have to do something every game. It doesn't have to be consistent, the same thing every game. You don't have to honor somebody at this particular time, at this particular spot in the game every single time. You can just mix it up a little bit, because I've always felt, because I'm a marketing genius apparently, but I have always felt like you know, and not only having the band involved, but when if you show highlights that are up on the Jumbotron of old games, if you honor former players, which they had the alumni come out there, a lot of the former alumni that walked out there, a lot of great players that were out there that were getting honored all at one time. Of course, number one being Blake Edens. But, you know, they were all walking out there and everyone cheered for him and went crazy. You know, stuff like that's really good. It's just, and again, this is the smallest amount of things. Is if you win, it doesn't matter. As long as you keep winning, this stuff really doesn't matter. It just is something that I look back on and I'm like, I wish that it could be reversed. I wish it could go back to the way it was, to where the crowd was the reason. The crowd was the show. The crowd was the show.
We need Bubba Hogg.
During timeouts. We do need Bubba Hogg. I want to rephrase that because I'm not saying they should be the show over the team and over the players. I'm saying during timeouts, the fans need to be the show, not the stupid emoji cam, which is a failure every single time.
We need kiss cam, you know.
Yeah, kiss cam. Kiss cam, emoji cam, clapping cam, dance cam, whatever. It all sucks.
We need to make sure you and Ty are sitting next to each other, then zoom in on you two. That would whip the crowd into a frenzy right there.
That'd be terrible.
Now, I mean, to me, I think videos could be great in the right moment. Maybe shorten up these presentations. Here's the thing. You could have a chance to excel.
Mm-hmm.
You got what? It's about, there's supposed to be 75 seconds if there's no media, but the media is when you have timeouts, extend them a little bit longer. So they're a couple of minutes. You get your business done, and then you could put a 30, 40 second video. They got very talented people up there that can put some great hype videos up. I don't know what the rules are in the SEC. There may be a rule prohibiting this, but I've seen it none, so I don't think there is. Then you could whip the crowd back into a frenzy with a great video to close the timeout.
Yeah, it's about getting back right up into the game.
Oh, I don't know. You got four great HD screens right up there. You tie in the ribbon boards, all that. You use the great sound and acoustics in that building that you can use with your sound system, and you show a great Corliss highlight, a great Scotty highlight, a great, you know, pick one or something from earlier in this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a great win over that day's opponent, whether it's A&M or Kentucky's coming in a few weeks. Qualls with a dunk at the buzzer would get replayed over and over and over. That has to play right before tip off, right?
Mm-hmm.
On the video board.
Mm-hmm.
With Chuck blaring through the arena. Qualls with a dunk at the buzzer and the Hogs win, you know. I see what you're saying. You could do both. You just shorten one up to leave time for the other because the visual on those video screens coupled with great audio, because we know great audio is the theater of the mind.
Of course.
That's why we're here every morning.
Mm-hmm.
That is what could amp that crowd back up.
Yeah. And it's just small things like that that I feel like you're not having to completely reinvent the wheel. It's small things.
The band's a key to this. I'm just telling you, back in the day of Barnhill Arena, Ropkin ran the show over there, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, but people talk about the legend because of how much it was a part of the game and part of the atmosphere.
It was, I don't want to say it was as much a reason to go as the team because that's overstating it, but it was great added value.
Mm-hmm.
To the entertainment of the event. Let's put it that way.
It was added entertainment where instead of being entertained by French fries flying through the air, you were entertained by the energy.
It hurt concession sales because you didn't want to go get in the concession line because you wanted to see what was going on with the band and them running around and all this stuff. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
As a 10 or 11-year-old kid, I loved it.
Mm-hmm. And again, it seems like it's so easy just to do. And you don't have to go to these marketing events and these things of what experts are telling you what works at these games and these events. You need to know who Arkansas is and what they can do and what the fans can do too. I mean, it's as simple as that, but then they have this thing where they beat the drum before the game starts. They have this big drum. Bobby Bones was out there beating the drum and it's just like, what is this?
What is a love affair with that guy?
Well, it's just, I'm like, why can't, and I have been on this pedestal forever. Why can't you do it in basketball like you do it in football? What happens, Tommy, when the team's about to kick off? What do Arkansas fans do?
Well, we call the Hogs.
They woo, and then once the ball's kicked off, pig suey. It's as automatic as that. Why can you not do that the same in basketball, where you start wooing before the game ball's tipped, and as soon as it's tipped, pig suey.
Well, you used to do the deal with the band, and as they were coming out on the floor and getting ready to tip, and the band would play the music, and the and then the students would cheer, "We're gonna beat the hell out of you.
And you.
And the place was great. And that, you know, you'd cheer, "We're gonna beat the hell out of you," about the time the referee'd go in there, toss it. It was awesome. The building was great.
Yep.
Now, the problem is you lose a lot of these traditions, John, when you got 6,500 there for a game.
And I understand.
And they don't work well with 60. They work fabulously with 19,000 in the building, with 17,000 in the building. With 7,000 in the building, they don't work so well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these things were wonderful in 1994, 5, 6, when you couldn't get in. They were great in Barnhill when you couldn't get in. It loses its luster. Mm-hmm. With 4,800 on a December Tuesday against, you know, Texas State.
Again, I get, but can you not be flexible and make the adjustment where it's like, man, we're going to have 19,000 people here at this
game? You need to have a game plan for a Saturday sellout and a game plan for Texas State Tuesday
night.
Two
different scripts where you're like, all right, if we're gonna rock this joint, we're gonna make it to where the other team and the opposing coaches they can't even imagine having how any team could win in this building. Just you want to have that impact where it's a fear factor.
Mm-hmm.
Where and I think that there's still some elements to that, but you want to have it to where when any team in this conference looks at having to play at Arkansas, they're putting an L next to it because they're like, nobody can win there, man.
Yep.
And honestly, Arkansas still has that. Their home record is some of the best you'll ever see, but still.
What you're saying is you want to be in their head before the game starts.
Yes. Yes.
That you feel like, you know, most places it's worth 7 or 8, maybe home court edge. You say in football, 3, it's a little bit more in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arkansas is worth 10.
I think
12.
So.
12. You know, that's what you want to get back to, and you feel like it's really that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then for a while, you lost your home court edge. Bud Walton wasn't worth the points it had been worth previously. That's what you're trying to build back to,
mm-hmm.
is the building's worth 10.
Yeah.
You're up 10 before you start.
Yeah. And it's because as soon as you do that, I mean, it's mentally getting into your other team's mind. Like,
And you're right about the pregame and that buildup. And that's why I think Arkansas and the starting lineups, John George is fabulous at how he phrases things. You add the light show and all that. And then that point, there's too often a letdown between that, the end of the starting lineups. The lights come back on and tip off. And that's where they've really got to amp it back up.
Yeah, they got
to I'm telling you, what happens in the first 5 minutes of each half is critical to who wins a ballgame.
Yep, and if the atmosphere, if you get off to a hot start, you don't want that to end. You want it to keep on going.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
Let's go to the phone lines. Joe is in Fayetteville. What's going on, Joe?
Hey, good morning, guys. So right before you went to the break, you're talking about you're just not quite a believer in this team yet, that they're an NCAA tournament team. I guess for me what it is I need to see a few SEC road wins, because that seems to be where we always struggled with Mike, is we may come out to a good start, and then we drop, you know, 4 or 5 road wins in that January, February area when we really needed them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's...
Can you not go 0-2 this week because you go to LSU and to Ole Miss?
Well, and I'm glad you bring that up, Joe, because maybe that's the key. Because, listen, they've had true road wins already this year in non-conference. They went 2 Georgia Tech and 2 Indiana and 1. And they are, honestly, they should have beaten Western Kentucky, but, you know, we can discuss that at a different time. But my point is that they've been on some true road games and have performed well for the most part. And, you know, if they can do that in the SEC, which, you know, as Tommy brought up earlier, I think a lot of it, too, is just not maybe just not knowing Arkansas, but not knowing this conference. And who's the good team and who's not? Like, if you beat LSU and Ole Miss this week, for instance, to us, and so winning road games, it's, hey, that's solid. That's what you need to do. But from the outsiders, from the people that are going to be putting you in the NCAA tournament or putting you in the top 25 or whatever, are they going to view those wins as saying, man, those were big time? Are those teams at the end of the day and at the end of the season going to be teams that make it to postseason play? Or are they going to be those borderline 500 teams that really don't do anything for you by getting those victories? Joe, I think that that's a main factor. It's just we don't know a lot about this conference as well as this team.
Yeah. My opinion is that – go ahead, Joe.
This is fine. Go ahead. I'll hang up and listen. You guys go for it.
I appreciate it, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
The key in basketball is to win your home games. And the pressure, that's where it is. It's not, the pressure is not to go win on the road. You're not going to win all those. You pick off two, three, four of those, and you're in great shape if you've won all your home games. Do you remember how many home games Arkansas lost under Mike Anderson last year? John, Tommy, either one of y'all?
Not off the top of my head, but I know it wasn't a whole lot.
It was six.
Oh.
They lost six.
Man, home games.
That's why he got fired.
Oh, I didn't even remember them losing six, but I'm not saying you're wrong, but it just didn't, I guess maybe it didn't seem like that way. Because you always felt like at Arkansas, even under Mike Anderson, they were always winning home games at a high rate. But, yeah, you can't be losing six games at Bud Walton Arena this season.
Yeah, so anyway, what I'm getting at is that what they did Saturday night is far more important than what they're going to do this week on those road games. They have to win their home games, and it does two things. It increases the excitement level at home every time you win one. And I want to tell you, that place was a powder keg. It was ready to explode just about in any situation. And about 3 minutes to go, when I think Isaiah hit a three, that's the loudest that I've heard it in that building in a long, long time. And it was, Eric Musselman doesn't have a reference point. He was just like, their guys were talking, their assistant coaches were like, this is incredible, an amazing venue. And, that's what Bud Walton can be. And the team, they were urged on every defensive possessions. Great basketball fans that knew what was going on. I mean, right off the bat, they were cheering, hoping for, a 30-second count. In other words, where the other team doesn't get a shot off, and it was close. They got one off at the buzzer. But you got to win your home games. And they look, with their defense, they're going to be a tough out at home. There's not going to be too many people beat them there.
You just kind of look at how the schedule's set up in January. Obviously, they played A&M Saturday. They go for two on the road this week at LSU and at Ole Miss. Then back at home for two with Vanderbilt and Kentucky. And then a road trip to Mississippi State on a Wednesday. Then they come back for that TCU game on Saturday the 25th. And then they remain at home for South Carolina. And that's your January on the 29th. So they've only got three road games in this month. And two of them are this week back-to-back. So I don't even know how much we're really going to know, even at the end of this month, guys, about what kind of road team and conference play this is. What we're basing it on now is really a lot about, like you've said, Western Kentucky and Indiana, where they still haven't lost a game in regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost to Western Kentucky in overtime.
Yeah, I think the key is get one this week.
Yep.
If they get one this week, either LSU or Ole Miss will be viewed by the selection committee is big-time wins. To go with Indiana will be a big-time win. I don't care how Indiana finishes, for Arkansas to go up there when they were rolling, it will be viewed as a huge victory. But you can win one of these two this week, and they'll be building momentum as they do that. And I wrote a piece last week interviewing Pat Foster and James Dickey, who are both very good friends of mine. James Dickey was a classmate of mine at UCA, and he was head coach at Texas Tech, head coach at Houston. Coach Foster was head coach, Lamar, Houston, and Nevada. Between the two of them, they won about 600 games, and they are thoroughly impressed with the defense and think that this is the kind of defense that travels on the road, that you can take on the road, and you're gonna affect the game. And that's a critical aspect of what Eric Musselman has done in his first year. And I'm impressed, guys.
Yeah.
And I know, John, you want to see more, and you want to see what they can do on the road in conference play. But I think this defensive team will, unless they get an injury, unless something happens to their depth, you know, their top line guys, you know, it's a core of seven. They can't lose any of those guys, that this will be a team that we're really proud of when the season's over.
And well, I think another thing that goes into it, Clay, is maybe it's not what I'm used to seeing for Arkansas basketball, because even under Mike Anderson, they always had, at least for the most part, you know, you had Bobby Portis and Michael Qualls, you know, there for that stint. They were phenomenal players. And then after that, you kind of went into the Moses Kingsley, Dusty Hannahs, and then you had the Daryl Macon and the Jalen Barford, and then you had the Daniel Gafford. You know, it was just kind of this flow of phenomenal college basketball players, SEC basketball players. And right now, yeah, I think that Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones are phenomenal players, but there's just, for some reason, there's still something there where I'm like, all right, but where's that? They don't have that guy underneath, that big athletic guy that like a Daniel Gafford or a Michael Qualls that can go out and make a highlight dunk. They don't have the big man underneath that they can go out and they can get their baskets in, because they've always had somebody underneath. And maybe that's where it's at, is because I'm wondering, when is this going to catch up to them?
Yeah.
Because that's just what I'm used to. Now, Eric Musselman, he's done a phenomenal – he's a great coach. The guy can coach. And I think that he's going to put these guys in position to be successful. It's just a matter of, until I see a full season of it, I'm still going to be wondering, all right, When is it going to be where the other team, the other coaches start figuring out how to shut Arkansas down and ends up costing them? And they may not, but that's just kind of what I'm waiting on.
Right. Now, what you see, they're susceptible to a team that has a really good, powerful inside game and understands how to get the ball to them. And Indiana did that for a half, and they pounded the ball inside, and I mean it was dunk after dunk after dunk. And you know, they don't have the depth where they can survive that if that team gets rolling. Now, they played five guards for a long stretch at the end of the game against Texas A&M, and they did well. And it's one of those deals, kind of like the academy schools playing football. They're playing option, you know, they're playing the triple option or playing the wishbone or whatever. A team puts five guards out there, you think, well, we've got three forwards or two forwards in a center, and we're just going to roll right over them. They won't get a rebound. Well, you got to match up with them too. Mm-hmm. And you've got to cover five guards, and you know, your post guys and your forwards, they've got to go out on the floor and guard a guy that's mm-hmm. capable of beating you off the dribble. And they're big guards, so they're getting away with it. You know, they've got a lot of size, except for Jalen Harris. Now, Jalen plays bigger than he is. He's a guard that can rebound. But they're not getting crushed on the boards. You know, they may not win the rebounding, but it's not going to be the factor that decides the game, because they're going to get more three-point shots and make more, and they're going to get more turnovers. So they're doing some things with those five guards that make it hard for you to stay with them.
See, for me, the biggest threat to Arkansas right now is the threat of injury, just because of the lack of depth. And if you lose one of about three players on this team, you know, Isaiah Joe, Mason Jones, or Adriel Bailey at this point.
Who was hurt and looked – I mean, it ended up not being a thing, but I remember just the feeling of when he had to be carried off the court a little bit, this the concern, because of that reason.
But four fouls, played just under 18 minutes Saturday, and that forced the five-guard lineup. I mean, you just saw how it changed the team. But you go without one of those two guards for any stretch of time, for a couple of weeks in conference play, you could go on a four-game skid pretty quick, you know.
Tommy, it's not just one of those. I mean, I would throw Desi Seals in there. I mean, I think that he's, you know, he's valuable. And Jimmy Witt is a huge matchup problem. He's your point guard, but he also is your best post player.
Oh, I agree. I'm just putting those three at the top of my list, you know.
No, but you can't. Yeah, but you can't. What Jimmy does in the, you know, it seems like every critical point in a game where it's like, uh-oh, there's a little bit of a run here. These guys are hanging around, and all at once, Jimmy's got the ball in the lane, and he's got a little shot up, and he's being covered by a 5'9" guard, and he abuses him. And so, but they can't lose any of those guys. They just don't have the depth, and the other part is every one of these guys has a role that they do one or two things really well, and it's a perfect complement. They've got some other guys that are, to me, are, you know, aren't bad players, but they don't fit like a glove like all these guys, these seven do. So, yeah, Desi Seals, you know, I mean, he hit the shot in Indiana that was the dagger, you know, it got him all the way back. And that, you know, they don't win without that shot. So, and, you know, he was hurt for a game or two, you know, had, a knock that he took, and it affected the team. They didn't quite perform as smoothly as you'd hope. But, yeah, here's the main thing. They're fun to watch.
Oh,
defensively.
Yeah.
Everybody is into every possession because they appreciate what they're doing.
Yeah, and I even said this a few weeks ago, that this team, I just don't see them ever getting blown out. And what I mean blown out is going on the road and losing by 20-plus points. Now, we'll have to see what type of teams they'll end up playing. And, you know, and everybody can get hot from three. You have sometimes those games, as we've seen Arkansas play, sometimes they're the ones that's hot from three. Sometimes they're the opposing team. But those happen in college basketball in general. But I just feel like with the defense that this team plays and how defense does travel, as you said, Clay, onto the road, I just don't see any game this year, even when you're going up against an Auburn team that's a top 10 team, a Kentucky team that's just got NBA yeah. talent all over, no matter who they're going up against, I just don't see them getting blown out. I don't see them getting embarrassed. Their defense is going to keep them in games, and as long as you are in those games and being able to rely on guys like Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones to make big plays down the stretch offensively, that's what's going to be your bread and butter and keep you winning these games.
The demand and the expectation on the defense. We saw the one play, Clay, where Arkansas had a communication breakdown, as Musselman defined it, after the game, and A&M got back in a transition play and got an easy bucket, and he went crazy on the sideline.
He lit him up, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm just saying, the demand he puts on the players, the expectation to play defense on every possession is there, and I agree with everything John just said, that you're not going to get embarrassed because this coach demands you play defense on every possession.
Yeah, and don't go to sleep on them with you're cruising along. And you think you got an 8 or 9 point lead, and you got them, and you go three straight trips down. And Joe and Jones, they hit three threes, and all at once it's a 1 point game. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have the ability to score in spurts, and while they're doing that, get stops. And that's how you go on a run. And they will score in bunches. And, you know, Joe gets hot, Jones gets hot. Now, guys, these are NBA players. And, you talk about Kentucky having NBA players. James Dickey and I are good friends, and he's been around, you know, the Big 12 with Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, both as head coach, assistant coaches, and he knows all the network of NBA scouts. And he said the games he's been there, there's been 3, 4, 5 scouts. And he says the particular scouts that are there, they don't come unless there's a first-round draftee on the floor. And it could be Jones, it could be Joe, either one. But he said those are both big-time players, and the scouts love them. I mean, they're Jones may be playing a little better than Joe right now, but the potential of Joe, you know, a 6'5 guy that pulls the trigger so quick and can shoot it from beyond NBA range is he's the star attraction. But these are special players, and we need to realize that what we're watching, you know, may not get to see these guys next year. They're that good.
Hot Take Monday brought to you by Crabtree RV in Alma. Check out their Facebook page right now. Get more details on the upcoming RV, boat, and outdoor show that's going to be happening at the end of this month, January 31st through February the 8th. Got a couple of weekends and the weekend between to check out travel trailers and fifth wheels at RV show prices, as well as bass, ski, and pontoon boats that are all going to be on hand. Incredible deals on golf carts, mowers, side-by-sides, four-wheelers, and outdoor clothing and equipment. They've done this for several years in a row now. It's the RV, boat, and outdoor show, Crabtree RV in Alma. They got a 26,000-square-foot indoor showroom, and you can shop all these categories at one time. Again, January 31st through February the 8th at Crabtree RV in Alma. Crabtree RV, it's where your family's dreams come true.
Another thing about the defense, too, and what this team will do to opposing teams is frustrate them. And it's all about how those teams respond in that frustration, because that, to me, is what really defines a well-coached team. that when you have the opposing team that's knocking you out of your rhythm, that's going up against you and maybe getting a little more physical with you, frustration set in, and it's a matter of, okay, do you fight through it or do you let it get to you? And I think a great example of this is when they played against Indiana on the road, when I forget the player's name, but the guy that reached up and gave Adriel Bailey the elbow. He got ejected from the game.
I think his name is Durham.
Frustrations boiled over, ended up costing Indiana. Mm-hmm. And he wasn't doing that because Adriel Bailey was just talking to him. I know that was what people were saying. No, he was doing that because he was getting frustrated. They were getting physical with him. They were taking him out of his game, ended up costing him. And I think that's
another. Couldn't get the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't get the ball.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and I think that defensively, that's what's going to put this team in so many positions on the road, especially to get those victories, is because when you frustrate those teams, especially at their home, when they get frustrated, they're going to act out. They're going to start making bad decisions. They're going to start forcing shots. They're going to start doing a lot of those things, at least the ones that maybe aren't as well coached, maybe the younger players. And if you can continue to do that, that's going to factor into it as well. And it's just a matter of Arkansas taking advantage of that opportunity when those teams get frustrated and saying, all right, well, you're going to act out. You're going to start making bad decisions. We're going to take those opportunities and turn them into points on the other end. That's what they have to do.
One of the things that's really been a joy to watch, I love defense, and the key to playing defense in the modern game, and it's trickled down from the NBA, is how can you handle the pick and roll. And they are marvelous in what they do against the pick and roll. I mean, they neutralize the pick and roll, and it's highly coordinated and orchestrated. And you know, you look for maybe an instant like there's going to be an opening or there's going to be a bad switch, and all at once they switch again. And their rotations do not allow for anything. And it's like teams are going to stop using the pick and roll because it's almost a play to their detriment. And that is extreme coaching. And it's the most dangerous play in basketball to get a mismatch. Well, they're playing with all the same size guys. They don't care how they switch, and they make sure they get the switch back almost immediately.
I bet these practices are just, if you're a coach, a high school coach, a coach at a lower level, just I bet it'd just be fun to consume and watch some of the drills and the way Musselman goes about teaching and installing this defense. I bet that's for a real basketball junkie. I bet that would have been a fun deal just to absorb.
Yeah, the practices under Nolan and under Mike Anderson were all almost basically full court, 40 minutes. That's where they got their 40 minutes of hell, because they'd go full court for 40 minutes. Musselman doesn't do full court or live 5-on-5 hardly at all. It's all drills. And it can be very boring and monotonous unless you're winning. Mm-hmm. And because they're winning, these players, new players, and they've been convinced that this is the NBA way, and they're getting prepared for the next level, and that this is how it's done, you know, to keep the, you know, you can't go, you're playing 80-something games, you can't go live and practice. Your leg's just not going to handle that for the course of 6-7 months. And so he's figured out ways to maintain conditioning without going 5-on-5 and running the floor, you know, in full court drills. But what I'm saying is, I think you'd be right, Tommy, in that the coaches, and I'm sure we're going to get to some clinic points. And that's what's going to come out of the clinics is, how does he do it? How does he do these drills? And how does he stack different drills on top of each other to replicate what he wants them to learn, the situations and games that allow them to play like this defensively?
Well, and we can end on this, that when these players are asked about the coaching and all that, they've been saying it for a while, that Eric Musselman treats them like professional players, which also goes into not only treating them like it, but being the expectation, going back to your point, Tommy. He expects them to go out and play. I'm not babying
when they don't,
you. Yeah.
When they don't, he lets them know.
Yeah, I'm not babying you. You're professionals now, so you have a job to do. Go and do it. So he handles it that way.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 30, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
About to get into the best and the worst of the weekend, but by the way, you better get excited, because been confirmed that Dick Vitale is coming to the Arkansas-Kentucky basketball game. He will be on the call. And from what I gather, and this is just, I come from the stats, this is going to be his first time back in Fayetteville since 1995.
Yeah, I saw on Twitter where he said he couldn't wait to see Mike Anderson again. He was excited about
coming. I bet you he's tickled pink to be able to go through that and call, what was he called, Moses Kingsley Beasley?
Yeah.
Man, that whole fiasco.
God almighty.
I mean, listen, it's I don't like Dick Vitale, but it is kind of a way of saying, hey, when you get Dick Vitale, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. I don't like the guy. He's over the top. He's past his prime.
Well, he's past it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just.
But it used to be. There used to be a day if Dick Vitale was doing your game.
It is the game.
It couldn't get any bigger than if it wasn't a big game unless Dickie V was doing the game.
And to me,
not that way anymore.
To me, nowadays, if you get Kevin Harlan and my goodness, his name just escaped. Bill Rafferty.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, to me, that's the A team for me. So, yeah. But
Jim Nance would disagree, but other than that.
Well, yeah. Right, but Jim Nance doesn't do regular season games.
Oh, no, he just waits till the Final Four to start.
Yeah, no, yeah, of course. If he does your game, it's the Final Four. But as far as regular season games go,
no, you're right.
To me, those are the big names that are there. So, but yeah, everyone get pumped, get excited. Dookie V is coming to Fayetteville on January 18th for Arkansas and Kentucky. So,
and when Vitale was here last, the diaper dandies are now grandparents.
Yeah, pretty much it's been that long, which makes me wonder, why has it been that long? I know Arkansas hasn't been, you know, the same story program as they were throughout, but even 95? I mean, my goodness, that's 25 years that it's been since he's been in Arkansas. It just makes me wonder what was the reasoning behind it. I always heard rumors and stories about when he came for Arkansas, LSU, and Barnhill. Somebody popped him on the back of the head and he was mad. I don't know. I just know he's coming back. And I don't really know if people are excited about it, but they're at least showing that, hey, it's a showcased game. So I think people will be pumped about that. All right, let's get into the best and the worst of the weekend.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
We the best.
This is the worst.
It's time for the best and worst of the weekend.
All right, it is time for the best and the worst of the weekend, brought to you by Joe's Grill and Cantina.
Hey, if you're looking for a place to watch some of the games this week with the Hogs on the road, head to Joe's Grill and Cantina. Wednesday night and Saturday as well. Joe's Grill and Cantina will be there. Half-price apps and taps during the game. TVs all around the restaurant, so it's a great place to enjoy it. Matty T was there Saturday. He's having some brisket nachos and Mexican pizza, the sampler platter, all these great things.
The queso with beef.
Yeah, there you go. All of that stuff. Half price during the game. Half price apps and taps. All the beers on tap are half price as well. Joe's Grill and Cantina, 3400 South 74th Street. Half price apps and taps during every game at Joe's.
All right, do we want to start with the best and or the worst? Which one do we want to do here? Let's do the best.
You're the captain.
Let's do the best. Let's start off on a positive note. The best of the weekend for me, personally. And this is, Tommy, I know you're going to groan at this, but this is fine because I thought it was kind of cool and at least a nice gesture. Is that on the game on Saturday against Texas A&M, Bobby Bones was there. And for those of you who don't know who Bobby Bones is, he's a syndicate radio show host for country stations. He's on American Idol. He's I don't really know how he got to the point that he's at. I'm going to be honest. I've never listened to a second of his show. But I know that he is famous, and he's on American Idol, and he has a lot of...
from Arkansas.
And he's from Arkansas, and he's a big Razorback fan. Well, anyways, he was at the game on Saturday, and he was kind of down in the media rooms and whatnot before the game and whatnot. And I just thought it was really cool that he was kind of going around and introducing himself to people that he didn't really know. And one thing that, of course, when he came up to me, I introduced myself and all that, and he remembered, and he was like, oh, so you were the guy doing the plane tracking. Is what he remembered from me on social. I was like, yeah, that was me. But anyways, we had a really good conversation. It was really cool. He was a really nice guy. And
I'm sure it was the highlight of his weekend.
Oh, I'm sure. I know that that's the reason he came to Fayetteville was really to meet me.
Mark that off his list.
But my whole point is that I just thought it was nice of him to introduce himself and to be really friendly. We talked radio. We talked career. It was just a very personable conversation. And I thought it was really cool of him to do that. Again, some people love him. Some people don't like him. I do know he's a big Razorback fan, and he carries himself very well. So I just thought that was really cool because, you know, sometimes, I mean, Bill Clinton didn't come up to me and introduce himself, all right, when he came to Fayetteville.
But he wanted to.
He wanted to, but his Secret Service says, no, it's okay. He lit a smoke bomb when he was 16 in high school. You don't want any part of that guy. So he didn't want that. But I just thought it was a really nice thing for somebody like Bobby Bones to come up and talk to and just
lit a smoke bomb in here last week.
Yeah, this time it wasn't a felony. But yeah, I just thought it was a cool gesture. That was my best of the weekend, is being able to meet Bobby Bones and see how cool he was. So that I'm just going to throw it up to that.
All right.
That was my best.
My best of the weekend. It's going to sound weird. It's going to start off like the worst. I get home Saturday night, go check the mailbox. No one's checked the mail, so I go to the mailbox. I open the mail. I put, I'm tabbing through the envelopes, and there's the dreaded letter from the IRS.
You got audited?
No.
Oh.
Better than that. It's like playing Monopoly. There's been a bank error in my favor.
Oh, wow.
This is the best of the weekend. My heart stopped. I mean, anytime you're standing in your driveway and there is a letter in your mailbox
from the
Internal Revenue Service, your heart will stop. I didn't want to go in the house. The last thing I wanted to do was open this envelope, but I knew it wasn't. I was hoping it wasn't big trouble because it wasn't certified.
Because if it's certified,
it was
then
just
you
a letter.
Know.
I'm like, well, maybe. Here's maybe this isn't terrible news. But I knew it was bad news. I just said, this has to be bad news. The IRS doesn't send you good news.
No
ever.
One likes, yeah. There's a reason why no one likes the IRS.
Ever. But this turned into good news because I get inside and after vomiting 4 or 5 times out of nervousness, I finally open the letter and they have, at their own doings, recalculated my 18 and 19 filings and I'm getting a refund. Not a huge one, but I thought it was going to be, hey, you owe us a bunch of money. So what I thought was going to be something horrible turned into a great relief. So my life flashed before my eyes for a moment. And then, I mean, whoever gets a letter from the IRS unsolicited that, hey, we owe you money?
Never.
Never.
In fact, I would never. I wouldn't have believed it. I would have been like, this is a fake letter.
Yes.
Somebody's playing a prank on me. Where's the credit card application
exactly.
in here?
Exactly. Like,
there's no way this was going to be real.
Clay knows what I mean. If you ever get a letter from the Internal Revenue Service, your heart just stops.
Oh, there's no question. And you're right. If it's a certified letter,
it really stops.
It is really bad.
Yeah. And
the worst is that you're not there to get it delivered.
Oh, and then you got to go to the post office.
You've got to go to the post office.
Oh, then
and I've had one of those. Ooh, yeah.
You worry for days.
Yeah. I want no part of that.
So I'm just
and
so.
And you get it on a Friday or a Saturday and you can't get by there to pick it up.
Oh.
Or then you get by there and they're trying to deliver it again, so you still can't get it. And it's just, by the time you finally get it, even if it's not bad news, you've got an ulcer.
Well, I had an ulcer working between the mailbox and the kitchen table.
Yeah, so, and Tommy, I'm sure after you told your wife how much money it was, she's like, well, I need a new dress.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, she's got that spent.
At
it's
that
found
point,
money.
At that point.
You said, okay, honey.
At that point, it didn't matter. I just thought, I wonder what we'd get for this house,
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how much the children's kidneys are worth, Because I thought that's where we were headed.
Yep. Yep.
We're going to have to sell a kidney to get out of this deal.
That's always a nice little relief there when you don't have to worry about
it
that.
It felt like being a Monopoly. Bank error in your favor. Mm. Collect $75.
You better knock on wood or something because that's too good of luck for you.
So I didn't care what happened in any of the games. I didn't care what happened, anything else. It couldn't get any better than that.
The IRS messed up and gave you money.
And I didn't ask them to.
I know. Just take that to the bank and hold on to that as long as you possibly can, because that's big time. All right, Clay, what's your best of the weekend?
My best was just I enjoyed primetime golf. And, the Century Tournament of Champions played at the Plantation Course in Maui, which I've played, by the way. Played twice about 15 years ago. So you see everything. And that's the fun thing about a golf tournament is that once you've been there, then it all makes sense. It's until you've seen Augusta National, none of it makes sense on TV. You can't really get the true feel for the undulations and everything. And that's the way the Plantation Course is in the wind. But it could be the best, and it could also be the worst, because there were just guys that were just choking their guts out down the stretch. And then it ended up being they played 3 holes of a playoff. It was only supposed to be one, but nobody could win. And then there was, one of the worst parts was Patrick Reed during one of his failed chances to win somebody from the stands yells, "Cheater!" And, you know, clear as day, you know, during one of those silent portions, you know, as the putt's rolling. So it was the best and also the worst. I'll have a real worst a little bit later, but that was mine. Just by the way, Justin Thomas ended up prevailing. He should have won it in regulation, but he hit it in the gunch on 18 to allow those other two guys to get into playoff, and then he eventually won. So I guess that was the best. Justin Thomas, who's one of four to win 12 tournaments, like before the age of 27 or something like that. Do you know who the other three are?
No clue. I'm going to say Tiger Woods, maybe?
Yep, Tiger Woods is one.
Jack Nicklaus might be one.
Yes. Yeah. Sam Snead.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking. That might be it. Maybe there's one more. Mm. But it's those are pretty good ones.
Pretty good company right there. Company.
Yeah.
All right, I'll go ahead and give the worst of the weekend. And, Maddie, I'm going to need your help on this because I know that many people do not watch award shows. But I watched the Golden Globes at least partially last night. I know you did, too.
Was that just because the NFL game was on before, or did you intentionally tune in?
I intentionally tuned in because I like to laugh at it. And I liked Ricky Gervais, who was the host of it.
Right.
And as we know, last time he hosted it.
That was the last time it was good.
Yeah. And because he loves to just absolutely eviscerate celebrities and those Hollywood elites.
He's got his beer sitting there, and he just tears them apart.
And he tears them apart, and it was fantastic. He did it again last night, and there's just something, I don't know what it is, but there's just something nice about seeing Hollywood elites just get absolutely ripped to shreds. You know, he made Jeffrey Epstein jokes, and you know, saying, hey, you guys were all friends with him. Like all of that stuff was just phenomenal. But the worst of the weekend is not because of just watching that, because that was awesome what he did. The worst of the weekend is these award shows for me in general, because I remember when they used to mean something. I remember they used to be great. I used to enjoy them. And I just feel like over the past 10 or so years, they've really gone downhill. And, you know, there's a lot of movies that end up winning, like if it's at the Oscars or at the Grammys, whatever it is, that it's like, I just feel like nobody really ever has heard of them. And it just doesn't have, I don't know, it just doesn't have the same luster that it once did, and it just seems like
it's not entertaining at all.
No.
I mean, unless you've got a Ricky Gervais, but they've started to go where they don't have hosts anymore. And but see, I'm a big fan of the movies, though. It's like I go to the movies.
Oh, yeah,
week,
yeah. You know, I know
so
you
I am
are,
curious,
yeah.
But I had no problem.
You need a season pass over there.
Yeah. I do. I got the Unlimited Planet AMC. Yeah.
I didn't even know they sold one.
Yeah. Well, you get to see three movies a week. So.
Yeah, he's way ahead of you, Tom. Yeah. But no, that
I
was
been to a movie in 3 years.
But see, I had no problem going to bed with an hour of it left. And I just, this morning, I just checked, oh, there's the winners.
Yeah, see, that's what I've done, too. Is like,
that's
I
all
just,
I need to know.
Yeah, just start seeing the winners. And it's just, I don't know, these award ceremonies. They're more just like
it's
patting each other on the back.
It's a self-congratulatory event where everybody kisses each other's butts.
Yeah, and I see.
And then once in a while you get a Ricky Gervais if they're willing to take a chance.
Yeah, you know, and it's like the most entertaining thing, I guess, was it the Oscars where they messed up on the, which.
Oh, they gave the wrong award.
Gave the wrong award out.
Because I went to bed right after that, and then the next morning I'm like, oh that wasn't
man.
The winner, right?
Yeah, see, so that's when it's only entertains when they screw up. But I get tired of these award shows. My worst of the weekend is that these award shows that everyone tries to make a big deal out of. They're not a big deal. The ratings have been down for a long time for a reason. Just not entertaining.
As much as I love the movies, too, I didn't even realize the Golden Globes were yesterday until about an hour before
it
came on.
Same here.
The only award show worth watching is the CMAs.
I do enjoy the CMAs.
Yeah.
But I look for the live performances, though. I don't watch it for the
awards. I was in Vegas last year when they had the CMAs. I tried to buy just a singleton to go.
Yeah.
So I'd like to go to this. Pricey.
What's pricey? Because there's a difference between Tommy Kraft pricey and John Neighbors pricey.
A singleton upper level was 500-ish.
Yeah, I ain't paying that.
I wasn't either.
I ain't paying that.
It was three blocks from my hotel. So, no.
500 to sit up in the top deck?
No,
I mean,
not
James Taylor better be performing for that one.
Twice.
Yeah, and you'd better
with George Strait.
Yeah, better not be on the front row. So, yeah, that was my worst of the weekend.
That, you can buy a George Strait concert ticket.
Exactly.
I mean, probably get backstage for something like that.
I wasn't about to do that.
Yeah, so what do you got, Tom, for your worst?
My worst of the weekend, and this is, I put this one on repeat. Mark it down for, like, early January, mid-January 2021. I'll be back on this one again. NFL overtime.
Yeah.
In the playoffs.
Bad.
I mean, if you want to have, listen, you have different overtime rules as it is for the playoffs because these games can't end in a tie. Regular season overtime, you get to 15 minutes. You still have a tie. You have a tie game, right? So they changed the rules for overtime because, well, you got to have a winner, right? Why can't we have a slight modification in the playoffs to the overtime rules? I understand why they do it the way they do it in regular season, because we got to move on to the next game. It's all about TV. I get it, and I'm fine with that. But in the postseason, the fact that, and you can sit here and you can call and say, well, but your defense should stop them. Well, all of the rules in football now are set up to benefit the offense and to penalize the defense. The idea that a season will be ended with a player like Drew Brees or any team not getting their team onto the field at least once for a possession just does not sit well with me. And I know some of you out there are fine with it, but I am not one of those people. I think each team should get a full offensive possession regardless if the opponent scores a field goal or a touchdown.
Yep.
I do not like sudden death in the event of a touchdown in the playoffs. You want to keep it that way regular season? Have at it. But in the playoffs, I want to see everybody get at least one shot to score. That's my worst of the weekend, is watching Saints-Vikings and just the fact that, hey, their defense didn't get the job done, but I at least would like to see one offensive shot for the Saints.
Well, I agree with you, and I could spend a whole show talking about how much I hate the overtime, but it's like, imagine in baseball, when you go to extra innings, that's first team scores wins. Like, what if the team that first scores wins?
Right. It's first batter just...
Yeah, first batter knocks a home run, and it's over. Like, no, that's not how it should be. It's not like that in any other game, in any other league, but for some reason,
It should come down to a coin flip. It just should. Yeah, that's what it does.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I don't know if it's just the NFL so apprehensive because they would refuse to follow college football in any certain model, but I'm like, anyone who thinks that NFL overtime is better than college overtime, you're drunk. I mean, that's all I got, because to me, watching NFL overtime is just more cringy. You don't feel satisfied at the end of it.
I don't care if the Vikings or Saints, didn't matter to me either way. I'm not a fan or a hater of either team. I just want a good game.
Yeah.
And I left unsatisfied.
Yeah.
It was like I had a good steak and potato, and the dessert was awful.
Exactly. Have you ever left unsatisfied after a college football overtime?
No, but
I haven't.
I neither.
So.
And they recently modified those rules after however many overtimes that I hadn't seen one play out this way. There is no more. We're just going to have a 2-point conversion contest now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Because even if the NFL wanted to make some adjustments, like, you know, because you obviously want to make it more difficult than the college football, do from the 25, but say there's no first downs. You get four chances from the 25. Yeah. Do something like that. It's got to be better than what it is now.
You know, Drew Brees should have had the ball in his hands at least once.
Yes, it's a shame.
And this happens every year, and I complain about it every year, and I've ruined what I'm going to use for Wednesday now. I'll have to come up with something else. But that was the worst of the weekend. I just went off that game and on to the next one, to the Seahawks game, it just didn't feel satisfying.
No, it was very unsatisfactory.
Felt unfair. That's what it felt. It felt unfair.
Yeah. No, that's a great one. All right, Clay, you got about a minute. What is your worst of the weekend?
Yeah, this will be quick. This is one of my all-time – this is actually another one of my best and worst. University of Texas basketball. Of course, it does my heart good when University of Texas football, basketball, and baseball sucks. Shaka Smart's basketball team scored 44 points Saturday. 44 points. They lost to Baylor. I think it was 59-44. They were, with about a minute to go, they were in the mid-30s. And, Baylor substituted, and they scored a couple of baskets and got into the 40s. But I love it when Texas basketball sucks.
Oh, it's phenomenal, especially when it's like Shaka Smart. Oh, he was the hot name coming out of VCU. I mean, he was.
Yeah, he's going down this year.
Yeah.
They'll be looking for a coach. Mark my word.
Yeah, that. And then, of course, Tom Herman in football. No one's upset by seeing them suck in that. So, I mean, it's just something about it. I don't know. Something about Texas. And it's almost like.
That's the worst performance of the weekend by a basketball team. 44 points, a Power 5 team.
Yeah. You can't buy your success, Texas, as much as you'd like to. You can't buy your success.
But A&M's tried too, and they haven't been able to.
Haven't been able yet, but we'll see, obviously, how those coaches are. But, yeah, there's just something about it. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with Texas being down.
I got some more worse, but I know we're about. So when we come back, I want to tell you another worst, okay?
Yeah, we can do that. We can get into that, and we can also get into the SEC update and kind of go around the conference, seeing what the teams did in their first games of conference play. Not every team played an SEC game. over the weekend. But we'll talk about some of those games as well and try to make sense out of this conference, which has just been completely and totally up in the air and really tough to figure out. But first games should be a good indication. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or to text in to the Morning Rush SEC update. Coming up next, stay with us, folks.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR.
You know what song this is from, right?
Can't play. I mean, I've heard the song a million times.
Yeah, I mean, I know Matty T knows
that.
I mean,
well, I thought this is a quiz. It's, no, it's from the Karate Kid.
I'm about to say,
Karate
Kid, yeah. I asked Tommy specifically because I know you would know.
Well, it's been 30 years since I've seen the Karate Kid.
Yeah, it's hey, it's a classic.
Well, somehow, Tommy, this is still his walk-on music. We didn't even know what
it was from. The guy that ran the dojo, Cobra Kai,
and
he's been in
John
like
Kreese.
He's in a recent campaign I saw that, you know, is kind of tying him back into that.
Did
that,
you guys watch Cobra Kai on YouTube?
I did. I know
it's
Tommy didn't. But
awesome.
No, I did not.
As far, you know, we talk about unoriginal ideas.
I just saw that on social media this weekend.
Yeah, well, that's what he's been in, has been the Cobra Kai.
It is so good.
It is really good. Yeah. So if you haven't watched, if you're a big fan of the Karate Kid, watch the Cobra Kai series on YouTube. It's a great one. You know, in our best and worst of the weekend, we were talking about overtime and how it's terrible in the NFL. And it made me wanted to ask the question, as far as all sports and all overtime periods, what is the best overtime?
Ooh.
I mean, because some people may enjoy penalty kicks in soccer.
That's pretty good.
Some people may enjoy the sudden death stuff, which I don't know how you could in the NFL. I know it's not fully sudden death anymore, but still an element of sudden death. Is it college football overtime? I mean, I'm sure basketball overtime is pretty good, but it's nothing unique. It's just five more minutes of play, so there's not really anything much different in that. Baseball with extra innings.
PGA Tour sudden death's pretty good.
When they go back to the
when
they go back to the 18th at Augusta National,
and it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. Now I tell you what I enjoy more than anything, and this is rare, is the U.S. Open plays a full 18, and they do it on Monday. And
I don't like it because I can't watch it. I mean, I'm working Monday.
Well, you're the boss. You can do anything you want, Clay. So don't act like you can't watch it. You know, it just cuts into your fishing. I understand. But that is probably as unique as we're just going to play a whole other round. And I guess the last one was what, Rocco mediating Tiger Woods on his bad leg. I remember where I was sitting watching about nine. I got to watch about nine holes of it. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I like college football. As far as all the conventional stuff, college football is still my favorite.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards that as well, just because college football overtime, it's you know that there's going to be complete and total fairness in it. And I think in overtime, that's important because obviously you guys, both teams did enough to where regulation wasn't good enough to decide who's the better team that day.
Yeah.
So to me, if you can't decide it that way, all right, decide whichever one makes that one extra play, that one play that wins it. And that's what I get with college football overtime is whichever team, they get both the same amount of chances or at least the same setup of chance, whichever team is the one that takes advantage of it is the better team.
I like penalty shots, though. Penalty kicks in soccer, penalty shots in hockey. Those are pretty good.
Yep. Is there if you could change, because basketball, as we mentioned, is not anything unique.
You have free throws, yeah.
Yeah, would you want to change it to something like that, like a three-point competition?
Free throws, because then
I think 5 minutes is kind of long. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd rather have it be 2 minutes instead of 5 minutes, but that's okay. Hey, you know that the NAIA in football, they would have a 16-team playoff. Back in the day, in the 80s, they would, when they got to the championship game, they would have a tie. UCA under Harold Horton had two ties for national championships, and they just both got national champions. And I mean, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
There should be no such thing as a tie in sports anymore.
They pretty well.
And both teams were very happy with the outcome. It's like we'll just share it.
I don't think in football is there a tie at any level.
NFL.
Oh, and the regular season, the regular season. But it's so rare.
They get to a certain point, they call it a tie.
At the end, you got to play 75 minutes.
Yeah, and again.
They had one this year, didn't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They have one or two a year. But, I mean, it's rare to have ties in football because I think even in high school, I mean, I know in Arkansas in high school, even non-conference games, they have overtime.
Mm-hmm.
College football, all games have overtime. I mean, in the NFL, you have overtime, but you have to. It is so rare to have a tie in the NFL.
They have ties in SEC baseball. Yeah, that's bizarre because they'll have a curfew.
A curfew has to be a Sunday. Has to be a Sunday game
because they've got a flight. Yeah, well, if they have a flight, if it's a bus, then they'll just keep playing.
Mm-hmm. Or
a
charter.
If there's a flight, there'll be every year. There's a tie, and it makes the standings impossible to figure out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, see, and that's where I get that if that comes into play, it's like, okay, we got to do a tie because with timing and everything. But it's like in the NFL specifically. It should never end in a tie, no matter. And again, if you want to do it like, because I know soccer does this, where they have the overtime period, which is an extra, I think it's, is it 15 minutes, I believe, after they hit the 90-minute mark, it goes to 105, I think. Don't quote me on that. But if it gets...
They have two 15-minute periods.
Two 15 minutes.
They turn around and give each team the win.
Yeah. Yep. And so if that happens, and then at the end of that, if it's still tied, a lot of cases will go to penalty shots. So why can't you do that in the NFL where you play a full overtime period, and then if nobody wins, or if nobody's... got an extra point, then you do something like that, like a field goal kipping competition, just something like that to at least get somebody out of there with a win, because there's no reason why in today's day and age, especially when you're trying to grade standings and all of that, you should ever have a tie. And especially in the NFL, like, that's the highest level of football. I can understand in junior high if you don't want to,
it's about TV, John, you know.
Yeah,
well, they got to move on to the next game, you know. If you have one of these games that drags on and takes forever, but to me, technology has changed. Now you got streaming. Mm-hmm. Now you got the NFL Sunday Ticket. You've got all these ways for people to watch games.
And everyone has alternate channels, too.
Right.
It's like if you're CBS, plenty of channels they can put
it on. The rules need to evolve into today's technology.
Yeah. And I don't think that's too difficult. I think it would be a fairly easy thing to do.
But the people that sit on these committees and make these rules are put there by the owners who are in their 70s and 80s that don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're fixing to probably see some novel way to play overtime. The new Pro Football League is going to announce their rules. I think it's tomorrow, and how they handle overtime, I bet, isn't the standard way. Yep. I think they're going to have a Dr. Pepper can, and the offensive linemen are going to have to come out and pitch balls through the hoop in a contest to decide it.
And you know what? That would still be better than the NFL overtime.
I still like the old, the XFL way or whatever it was of no coin toss. We just run the Oklahoma drill.
That's what I was about to say. Do the Oklahoma drill.
I wish we'd do that.
No problem.
Yeah. Can you imagine if we did that in the SEC?
Mano, mano.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It would be.
You talk about getting the crowd in their seat for kickoff.
So who would you pick out of all of Arkansas players to have your guy? Would it be Steve Atwater? Would it be Kanoy Kennedy? To go out there and do that drill. Winston.
What you do is, you know, with these new...
The Thumper, Wayne Harris.
New stadiums, new technology. You just run a Twitter poll or whatever, or you figure out some way for fans to vote on one
what
of three...
the overtime period's going to be.
No, I mean on this Oklahoma drill.
Yeah, on who gets in.
So your guy, who do you want?
Yeah. And, pick a guy, send him out there, and that's who's going to win the coin toss to start the game, and then you do the same thing for overtime.
Yeah, well, it'd be
more exciting than just a stupid coin toss.
I tell you what, Clay.
So who would you have picked for last year's team?
Well, for last year,
Jonathan Marshall, probably.
I mean,
strongest guy, right?
Yeah. Hey, it'd be more fun if you're talking about just historically. I think for sure Steve Atwater would be my guy on defense, but on offense, if you know, on that side of the ball, give me Peyton Hillis.
If you're talking historically,
I'm not gonna argue with that. D-Mac might have been there too, because he's. D-Mac, Peyton Hillis, you're in the ballpark with those two guys.
You're just talking about a guy.
Barry Foster, somebody like that.
You're just talking about two guys lining up, putting their hand in the dirt and going at it.
Mm-hmm. That's the way it needs to be. And, I mean, would you give...
That would be so fun.
And think about giving...
That would be so awesome.
But think how awesome it would be, too, if you're given five chances. Like, each team... And you have to do different players each time.
It would last until the first player got hurt at the coin toss, and then it would all be over.
Mm-hmm. But you know,
the pro teams, they don't care about that.
Yeah.
That's
they
just discard them and move on.
Yeah, cut them. They cut them before halftime.
Cut them.
Cut them and move someone off the practice squad would be elevated before halftime.
Yeah. He's lost his third coin toss. He's out of here.
Exactly.
Man, and then the thing is then you'd have to require all teams, or at least coaches would have to require to where they have set drills for Oklahoma drill. Well, like, they have to do that.
In one of the two players that has to, or if you've got five players, the quarterback has to be one of them.
I mean,
that
would be. Oh, my goodness gracious. That would be.
That's going to change the game.
Yeah.
It's like, we're into the point now where nobody touches the quarterback, or it's a personal foul and an ejection. yeah, could in the NFL.
Could you imagine John Stephen Jones going out there doing that?
Tom Brady in the NFL.
Not Tom Brady.
Yeah, going to the NFL.
He might chip a nail.
Yeah, there's no way they would ever have that. But there are different ways, and the whole point of this is that there are different ways to have overtime rules be
Oklahoma
better.
Oklahoma drill would be great. It'd like it for the coin toss, but you could use it for overtime.
Yeah.
Now, there would be arguments over, who won that? What is a really close battle? Who won that one?
Oh, no, I don't think there'd be an argument. The one guy's sitting on the chest of the other guy. That's what happened.
You go until the death.
Yeah. Right. It's a pin.
Because it's 5 yards difference, right? It's 5 yards wide is how they do it. Yeah. And then, I don't know, they'd have to set it up. But just
got to drive somebody back 5 yards.
But I'm sorry, but if somebody on Twitter or on social media, if I was just sitting at home and I saw it's like, this game, this football game is about to be decided. It's on television by Oklahoma drills. I don't care who it is.
Auto-tune.
Yeah, auto-tune. I am flipping over to that channel immediately.
But Arkansas is about to win the national title. I don't care.
I don't care. Give me that Oklahoma drill. Let's see who actually comes out on top on this. Like, it would be must-watch television. Yeah. It would be so phenomenal. So great.
Should you go to dunk contest maybe in basketball?
No, because then Arkansas would never win because they don't really have a bunch of dunk. Like I said, three-point competition.
But I'm going to tell you, the drama would be there with a free throw contest. That would make more drama.
Yeah. Might last
and
a while,
make the
though.
Big guy. Yeah, make the big guy shoot him.
Or how about this, a game of knockout where both teams just play a game of knockout. You go one by one, and the last player standing is the team that ends up winning.
That would take longer than the 5 minutes they do now.
But it'd be
so
much more entertaining.
How about a free throw contest with your offhand?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, you could listen, there's plenty of basketball games you could do to try to
instead
have some
of just
fun with
traditional
it.
Overtime. Yeah. Anyway, the NFL overtime has to change.
Yeah, that's
the playoffs,
the point.
At least.
That's the whole point of it all. That's got to change. It probably will never change. I don't know why they're so apprehensive to change, but for whatever reason, that's how they've always been with it. So maybe it'll change one day, but at this point in time, it looks like they're just going to stick it out. College football overtime rules reign supreme all the time. Appreciate everybody listening in to the Morning Rush today. For Tommy Kraft and Clay Henry and Maddie T, I am John Neighbors. Same sports show, same sports channel tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody. We will see you then.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.